Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Tina Horn, and this is Interrobang. Interrobang is the bonus segment of my Wire People Into That podcast. Follow at Tina Horn's ass, or at Tina Horn's ass, if you're nasty, on Twitter and Instagram. Visit wirepeopleintothat.com. Support my show and get extra shit at patreon.com/TinaHorn. That's patreon.com/TinaHorn. Hello, Lydia. How's it going?
Oh, it's great. It's great. How are you?
I'm good. Oh, I feel refreshed and good. It's a beautiful summer day. It's actually kind of muggy.
It's kind of muggy, but I'm from Florida, and so I'm used to it, and I love it.
Okay, awesome. So Lydia Bonilla is the chief provocateur of the House of Plume, and the House of Plume has been around since 2013, so about 4 years. Do you want to tell the people, if they're not already familiar with House of Plume, what y'all do?
Sure. So what we do is we create really elegant and functional storage solutions for your sex toys. So if you've created an amazing box that is like, I call it like Wes Elm meets Jimmy Jane.
Yes.
And it also comes with a travel case. So if you're concerned about, taking your sex toys while you're either going to honeymoon or going out with your girls or wherever,
yeah,
we have you covered there.
Awesome. Or for like a weekend sex party, or
absolutely, whatever.
I cannot tell you how, you know, I do a lot of traveling for sexy events, from everything from play parties to like leather contests, and mm-hmm. also as a sex worker, and I cannot tell you how many different solutions I've seen over the years where people will use like Caboodles. You remember Caboodles from the 80s? The little makeup plastic kits,
yes,
right? Or
yes.
Or actual tool kits, or yes. I definitely see, I'm from California, so I see a lot of hippies like reusing bags, or certain gym bags. And yeah, there's all kinds of issues with those things where they all get thrown in together, and then the lube explodes, and then there's
lube always spills no matter what. No matter what you do, I know that a lot of manufacturers spend time on the lid or what have you, but it always spills.
Yeah, totally. Sometimes you have considerations where you don't have time to clean your toys, so things are dirty, and then things get like grimy and crusty in there. So like having something, and I feel like having something stylish that you can use to express your sexual personality in how you keep your collection of sex toys, whether it's keeping it in your bedroom or your playroom or at work or for travel, is a great opportunity to express yourself.
You know, it really is. And the other thing that I like to look at it as is that it's a great way for you to honor yourself.
Awesome.
You know, when you put toys just like in a dusty box or in a bag
or on the floor
or whatever, you're kind of just saying to yourself that your pleasure is not important.
You're so fucking right about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Can you describe that? Do you have like a line of like different boxes, or is there mostly just like the one?
There's the one. There's a sort of like kind of like a universal size.
Cool.
Because the cool thing about making this product is that the size of the body parts that they go into normally don't change. So, you know, I don't have to get like, you know, too crazy with the sizes. But yeah. The box comes in generally in a universal size that'll hold toys that are under 9 inches.
Cool. Cool. So if you've got one of those like arm length butt plugs, you're going to have to find a different storage solution.
You will have to find something else. Yes.
Or maybe one day you can scale, for that. Cool. And, so besides House of Plume, mm-hmm. Another of your big projects is Women of Sex Tech,
yes.
Which is an organization or group, would you call it?
It's a group. You know, it's a group of women throughout the world that work in the sex tech industry. And basically what sex tech is a melding of sexual wellness and technology. Mm-hmm. So we have women that are working on apps or have done apps or are working or have a sex toy subscription service, like the co-founder.
Oh, right. Unbound, right?
Yeah. Right. You know, sex toy brands, it's pretty varied, but the goal is the same. And that is to promote, women in the industry, as well as to promote, female pleasure.
Fucking awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that that is really amazing. I feel like I have seen an increase in women taking themselves seriously as entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm just paying better attention, but it seems to definitely be on the rise, not only in our industries, you know, the sexuality and health and wellness industries, but other industries as well. And, you know, I think that I find myself realizing that I have some internalized sexism about what it means to be an entrepreneur. I think that in the work that I do, I'm like, no, I'm not an entrepreneur. Like, entrepreneurs are D-bags. Like, I'm just like a girl with an idea who has a little punk rock thing going on. But seeing what you are doing with Women of Sex Tech and what Polly and a lot of other folks that I have seen at some events recently are doing is actually really inspiring me to take my work more seriously in terms of business and just in terms of identifying as like a boss bitch, basically.
Yeah, that's great. It's really great. And it's really about creating your own lane, your own definition of what, you know, being an entrepreneur and what being a leader is. One of the things that annoys me, really annoys me right now, is the feminization of leadership. And I know where it comes from. I know it was created as a way to promote female entrepreneurship and to create some kind of camaraderie. But, you know, leadership should be judged on whether it's effective or not, not whether it's pink, you know? So it's, I used to identify with those terms. And then I said, you know, that is just, it's just annoying now. I'm a leader who happens to be a female. And there are things throughout the day that one can relate as either masculine or feminine, and you know, just delving into either one is just aspects of being a good leader.
Absolutely. And I think that to me, the appeal of branding around something female,
yeah, it's whether all about it's, branding, right? I get it. It's cool, it's cute, you know, and it's very tweetable. But I'm over it.
Whether the product itself has, you know, feminine demarcations of, you know, of pink and purple, or, you know, sparkliness, or being like chirpy or perky or upbeat or whatever, or whether the events around, you know, women getting together or, you know, promoting women, you know, are demarcated as girly or feminine. to me, the real issue is if a female entrepreneur likes pink, then she should be able to wear pink.
Absolutely.
And yeah. And yeah. And that, and but that you shouldn't have to feel like in order for women to be powerful, or in order for women to have knowledge, or in order for women to create community and to get, mm-hmm. you know, to get together and to share resources and to network, that that things have to look a certain way, or that there needs to be something about the style or like if there is right. no fashion to it, that women won't be interested.
Exactly. Right, right. And that actually comes up in design too.
Mm-hmm.
How I actually found my designer for my product is that I was researching, you know, product development. I didn't know what product development was.
Mm.
Right. So there's an area of smart design called the Femden, and I don't know if they still have this, but in essence, it's a group of female designers
mm.
that make products geared towards women.
Mm.
And they, you know, would talk about the pink it and shrink it thing, where, you know, if you want to make a phone, or you want to make, let's say, speakers for a woman, then you make it smaller and you make it pink.
Interesting.
And I just thought, wow, that's so cool. That is so interesting that this company is taking this on this way. And, but you know, I know Smart Design is a big New York design firm, no way I can afford them. So I reached out to the woman that ran that group at the time, and I asked, I said, do you work with any freelancers that you could recommend? And she said yes, and that's how I met my designer, who is also a proponent of feminine and masculine tones in design.
Cool.
That was important to me, that it didn't look overly masculine nor feminine.
Cool. Can you describe how you achieved that? Is that, what are some of the elements that sort of make it almost like androgynous in that way?
It's not rounded. Okay. All the edges are sharp.
Cool.
It has a leather latch.
Mm.
The colors are not overly masculine or feminine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, half of our customers are men and women. It's really split down the middle.
Oh, that's awesome.
And the other reason is that even if the product is for a woman, you know, guys don't really like, for the most part, you know, I won't generalize, but for the most part, men don't really like stuff that's like overly girly.
Yeah.
You know, and if you're sharing a space with someone else, it's important that, you know, they're brought into it too.
Totally. Absolutely.
And there are women too that just don't like stuff that they're overly girly. A lot of women have said, oh my God, thank you so much for not making this like with pink lips.
Totally. Yeah. And, you know, like sometimes I do like things that are girly and sometimes I don't. And it's nice to have choice. And also there right. are plenty of things out there when I want to have a girly thing. There's no shortage of that in the world.
Exactly. You could choose.
So tell me how you got started doing House of Plume. What's your origin story?
So how did I get started? I was a disgruntled banker.
Mm.
I
see. That seems like there's a lot of those.
I mean, they churn them out, you know, your Wall Street churns them out. So I had a personal organizer that had come to my home
yeah.
and looked through my drawers, and she came across like that drawer, and I uh-huh. was like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. So we had a conversation about where to put them, and she said, you know, there's nothing in particular. You can buy a plastic box, this and that. And I went, you know, I'm into like Art Deco, and
yeah.
I was like, that's not going to work. So I started to look for some, and I'm also anal.
Mm-hmm.
So I started to look for something for myself that would work. I took like a jewelry box, different types of boxes, and took the inserts out and put the toys in, and that didn't work. And I got frustrated with it and I forgot about it. And then one day I walked into Babeland, you know, wanting to replace a toy that had broken. And I just really, as an afterthought, I'd asked, I said, do you have any storage for sex toys? And she went, no, but we get that question all the time.
Hmm.
And I went, oh, I said, well, I'll make one. And
nice.
She said, okay, you know, we close in 10 minutes. But, and then that's just what I did. I was foolish enough to do it. Cause I didn't, you know, as I said earlier, I had no experience in product development. So I had no idea what a beast, it is. And, you know, I was been grateful to work with some incredible people, that helped me, you know, kind of mine, the dangers, and, I've had a lot of fun.
Awesome. And so where can people find these boxes now?
Houseofplume.com.
Cool. Cool, mm-hmm. cool. So they can order them online.
Yes.
Fantastic. What have you learned about the sex industry and the sex product industry and sex adjacent industries since making a career change?
That is wider than banking.
Oh, man. That's real white.
That's white, isn't it? It's yeah. I was surprised by that. I don't know what I was expecting, really. You know, when you just are so like, you know, you no idea what you're doing. I didn't have an expectation, but I that was one. And how conservative some of the major players can be.
Yeah, that is one of the central ironies. Definitely.
It's so ironic to me that, you know, this is your. You have a lifestyle that is inclusive because, you know, you want to fuck everything. But the way that you do business, and I want to say your political ideologies don't line up.
That is very disappointing.
Yeah.
No, go on.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's but... In a strange way, though, I found it comforting because it was familiar to me.
Oh, man. I'm that.
I knew how to maneuver in that because I was like, okay, this is, I know this.
Yeah. Well, what are some of the ways that you tackled that or maneuvered it?
Just be myself, you know, and really stand behind, the product. I believe in the quality of the product and our intention and our mission. And it was no way that I was ever going to fit in, you know? Mm. And so it was just going to use that, just decided to use that as to my advantage versus trying to fit in. Cause it wasn't going to happen. And also being from New York, I think it also was, like a hindrance because a lot of the industry is on the West Coast.
Mm, that's true. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways that the sex industry is affected by being so overwhelmingly white?
Like, they're out of touch.
Say that again.
Out of touch.
Out of touch with what?
Just out of touch with social trends.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I look at some of the, you know, you look at some of the marketing or the branding for some of the larger brands.
Mm, like sex toy brands?
Yeah, sex toy brands or sex toy accessories. And I'm like, who looks like this?
Mm.
You know, I think women have stopped getting the big breast implants now. Like, I think you can put those away.
Yeah, some people do, but there is an overwhelming representation of a certain kind of woman being sexy, whether it's being marketed to people who would find who are attracted to women, and yes. so sex is being used to sell it in that way because people are turned on by women, or things are being marketed to women and it's like aspirational, like, well, this is the kind of woman that every man wants to fuck and every woman wants to be, right? And like,
yeah,
you know, first of all, I mean, that's limiting in a million different ways, but I think that you're right. I think that there is this very like retrograde idea of what it's a sexy, very, beautiful woman is.
It's just very Pamela Anderson, you know, 2000 look.
Yeah.
It's just like,
yeah,
it's, this is over. You know, I think the bleach, you know, the super bleach blonde,
yeah,
and you know, the extensions to your ass. It's just done. And I think consumers gravitate to images that are just more realistic.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and it's really for them to just take a look and to take some risks with that and see and test it. I mean, yeah, I could be totally wrong. I don't know.
Yeah, but I also, I mean, I think that people would be surprised, and I think it's like something that you see in the movie industry, right? People say, well, we have to cast Scarlett Johansson in this role that is supposed to be for an Asian woman because we need it to perform well and people know her because she's a movie star. And it's like, well, she's a movie star because you cast her in these movies. So maybe if, and like, maybe you would make a million less dollars by casting someone who is less familiar to a global audience now, but then if you cast her and you make a good movie and she's the right person for the part, then she also will be a movie star.
Right. You she know? Also and so will be a movie star, and then, you know, there's probably more money in the back end. But, you know, it's funny, like, people, there's just a risk associated with, you know, social change that it's for, for some entities, it's just too ingrained in them. And in order for you to see something different, in order for you to do something different, you have to see something different around you.
That's right.
And so a lot of the, for, you know, taking it back to sex toys, some of these companies are based in very, like, bland and conservative areas. You know, I don't know how you're going to get, you know, figure things out. I subscribe to some blogs or, like, look online, but I don't know where you're going to get it in some of these places where they're based.
Well, I mean, it seems like they would need to hire you.
Right. They would need to hire me.
They should hire you.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be amazing if part of the project of Women in Sex Tech was...
I didn't even think of that. That's great. That's awesome.
You can have that one.
Boop.
I mean, or even, you know, either hiring you or you facilitate, you know, like a new design firm of people who are actually paying attention to A, the trends you're talking about, B, the
just real... gave me a new job. I love it.
You're welcome. See, this is what I'm saying. You inspire me, and then, you know, I can inspire you right back.
That's great.
Androids and authors.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Of my mind, the things I'm dreaming of from my station, a vacation, new locations. Oh,
I've done some work in the sex toy and sex tech industries, and I think that it's very recent that we've seen the sort of trend of sex positive, female friendly, feminist sex toy stores as like a space that's even possible.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I turned 18, the place that you would buy sex toys was definitely like, you just kind of know you're in for a very seedy experience, right? And if you're somebody like me, you're like, I'll embrace the sleaze. That's great. You know, I can sort of navigate this and sort of like know what to enjoy about it and what to leave behind and how to find what's right for me. But I'm like very confident. I'm like the exception to the rule. I'm like very confident about those kinds of things. And I also find sleaziness hot. Right. But so then, you know, in the past, like, 15, 20 years or so, you have this rise of, you know, spaces that are friendly to queer people, spaces that care about design and are not, you know, and also care about the way that the products are manufactured, that they're ergonomic to different bodies, and also that they're not made of toxic materials, all this stuff, right? So it seems like when you think about the fact that it's not that recent that sex toy business has even been conscientious of anything, it makes sense that also their advertising would be so behind the times.
Yes, yes.
And they probably feel like they're doing fine. I mean, if they felt like there was money to be made by changing things, they would change things, right?
Yeah, they probably would. You know, it's a it's interesting because it's like sex is all about openness, and at the same time, they operate kind of in the dark.
You know,
there are no. Maybe for the with the exception of one entity, one company that's publicly traded. So the exchange of information is not the same that you would have in other industries. And you know, once you've set the tone, you've been around for a long time, it's like, you know, you kind of just ride it out. You don't have to really you know, you really don't have to like try so much if you're like the first or second entry company in any industry.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting. It is. The other thing that it's kind of related is that there is a lack of advertising, you know, and due to, you know, the issues we have with social media, we're not able to advertise on Facebook and on Instagram.
Right.
And so that also kind of limits the number of people or the number of companies that can compete.
Right. That's the other thing, is that there's so much stigma around even being able to put your product out there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Facebook rejects, you know, anything to do with certain terms like sex toys, at linking to sites that have that in somewhere in on it. You know, they also have issue with that. So
it's so unfortunate.
It is unfortunate, and it's a topic that we are dealing with as a collective with Women of Sex Tech.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. What are some of the ways that you're trying to address that?
Well, we're having an event July 18th at the Museum of Sex, where we're going to be talking about it, and just to continue, you know, to create a dialogue with the folks at some of these companies, you know.
Cool.
They don't, you know, they don't have an obligation to do it. It's not like it's something that they need to do, but I think the public needs to understand, you know, what is happening with respect to like what information you're not getting simply because some person says that it's gross or that it doesn't meet their policy. And really what it is that they're trying to avoid, you know, someone being outraged somewhere in the middle of nowhere
right.
by something that could, oh, this was offensive, and my child look at it with that.
Right. And, you know, the thing that strikes me that is so unfortunate about that is that social media is a space where marginalized people or unconventional people or folks that are usually just not given a seat at the table
right.
have had the opportunity to reach their audience without...
Sure.
To like mix metaphors, yes. like to sidestep the gatekeepers,
yes,
you
yes.
know, so, in terms of creating style, in terms of creating community,
sure.
in terms of, being able to market to the demographics and the consumers that they, that will most appreciate their products. So that's part of what's unfortunate about that is
yeah.
that, and, you know, I mean, that's been true with crowdsourcing platforms, from Kickstarter on down, that that you some changes have been made,
sure.
but you know, historically, that's a battle that has to be fought in payment process. I mean, I'm sure you have had to deal with this as well. If you sell
right.
stuff on your website, that payment processors You know, credit card companies, you know, I know from working in porn that credit card companies have very strict rules around what they will and won't process in terms of content. And, you know, of course, PayPal often will freeze people's accounts just because they have done sex work in the past. And so, you know, there is so much stigma that is limiting the ability of people who do business that has to do with sexuality from reaching their market and reaching their demographics. So it sounds like you're going to change all that for us, right?
Yes, that's the goal. That's the goal. I mean, it's not something that like I woke up and said, okay, I won't think I'm going to take this on, but it pisses me off enough. To do something about it.
That's a good motivator. Are there other things in the industry that you are trying to address or trying to change or that you want people to know about that they might not know about? Or just like bullshit you've encountered?
Oh, what is the bullshit I've encountered? You know, overwhelmingly so, I could say that I've been really embraced.
Awesome.
You know, by people, because I came into this industry not having had an experience, and I know that in other industries, like if I was at a banker's event and I said, oh, you know, me and my friend who just started yesterday, they would not talk to her, you know. And people were have been really receptive and been willing to help me and to further along the mission. So it's been overwhelmingly positive. You know, I don't want to rag on it that it's been terrible. It's been actually been really great.
That's great.
Yeah.
Is there anything specific that has been great about it that you want to share?
Yeah, the women that I have met and encountered they've been great. You know, like they're just, we can, you know, have a good time, talk about business, and we have enough in common that it's not uncomfortable that I'm black. It's like, you know, it's like no one makes it a point to be like, and you're black, right? it's like a lot of, I met people where we have a lot of commonalities in our background, cool. No matter where we've grown up, you know, and we all believe in empowerment, female, you know, empowerment around pleasure, and so that's a driving force to find common ground.
Do you think that there are ways that the sex industry can serve women of color and black women specifically better?
Sure. Is one, meet them where they are.
Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot of shame still around sex. A lot of education around sex in communities like either in the African-American community or the Latino community. I actually happen to be, I identify really as Latina because it's how I was raised, even though I'm, you know, racially I'm black, but, and my mother, you know, God bless her heart, she didn't know anything. When she had a conversation with me about sex, it was, she opened up a book, because she's religious, and she opened up a religious book, and she showed me a picture of an open fortress and a closed fortress. And she said, you are to be the closed fortress, and you are not allowed for boys to touch you. And that was the extent of my education in sex. And so there are a lot of women that have similar experiences, and their mothers have stories about or shameful past around sex, that there's shame around it that they, you know, pass on to their daughters, and it's just a cycle really that hasn't been broken yet. You know, so I say all that to say that the sex toy industry could really do a lot just by you know, providing information, one that's targeted toward that, just understanding more about why It is the way that it is. And there's, I also feel like there's just a lot more. There's a lot of duality. Not actually, I'll take that back. It's not duality. It's more like there's a misconception that, you know, women of color are more like promiscuous or, or whatever, but it's quite the opposite.
Yeah.
Sort of shy, you know, might be outwardly, even like the images you see in the media, it's like women are like, they're outwardly sexually, like you have Sofia Vergara, who's like outwardly sexual. But that same type of woman might be really conservative about sex.
Yeah.
Despite the way she, you know, looks or dress.
What is that stereotype about, do you think? Or where does that come from?
You know, the, I don't know, novelas, like the hot Latina, the, you know, the hot maid, or.
Yeah.
It's the forbidden. It's mm-hmm. when you, there's something that's forbidden and, you know, you make a story about it.
Yeah, totally.
You know.
Well, that it sucks to find yourself between a rock and a hard place, so to mm-hmm. speak, right? Where you want to be more, you know, you want to be sexually confident, but you also don't want to be put in the box of like being fucking exotic or
right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm
that's a good point that you make that bring that is that because that's the thing put in there when it's when we talk about women of color and sex is like the exotic,
right?
You know, it's what is that about? What is this? It's not we're not fruit, you know. We're not like
fuck no, yeah.
You know, it's we're just women who have, you know, different experiences, but there's not, you know, nothing exotic. And you see it in porn. Like porn does it really, really well about. Just like the terms that they use,
I know.
And it's you really like if you really want to know like the garbage in somebody's brain, you look at like the tags on a porn site.
I agree, and you know, race in porn is very frustrating because porn is super racist. By and large, I definitely know people in the industry who are fighting that in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of the sex workers and, porn performers of color that I have talked to about this issue, a lot of the time what I hear from them is a frustration that, they actually like their job, you know, and this is not always true, but, often they like their job and they feel, respected on set and they don't feel like people are necessarily in their work environment treating them with a racial insensitivity. But then the marketing, you know, and this comes back to what we're talking about, that the people who have no connection to these people as performers or as talent are then believe that the way to market their image or their performance is in these incredibly reductive, exotifying, othering ways that reduce them to cultural stereotypes, racial stereotypes, that the wrongness that like saying the thing that you're not supposed to say that is actually like hurtful and offensive and untrue is the marketers think that sensationalism is part of the excitement of looking at porn. And perhaps for some people that excitement is real in there. But I think it goes back to
I wonder if the data, I'd be curious to know, like if the data for the search term shows that this is what people are looking up. I don't know.
You know? I mean, I think, but here's my thing. I think that sometimes the, it's like a chicken and egg situation where like people are like, I'm trying to think of an example. If somebody, if somebody has a preference for mm-hmm. women who are thicker, right?
Yeah.
That's their preference. Sure. I think, I'm happy that some people prefer that, you know, mm-hmm. and I don't think that there's anything objectifying or othering or exotifying about having a preference for women with thicker bodies. Right. So they might want to know that they want to see that in porn. So they know from a like utilitarian perspective that they have to type in big booty, right? And that might not be the most, you know, the big booty is like far from the most offensive term in porn, yeah, but right, like,
very,
you know,
peachy sounding.
But like just to, yeah, to have an example without, you know, getting into like stuff that's too too dark, like so they might, you know, never use that term, or they might actually think that term is like, maybe, you know, it's like cute, but they want that's not like a term that they would use like in their everyday life, but in order to, they know in order to get the imagery that they want, that they have to type that in. And of course then you can extrapolate a lot of worse words that people feel mm-hmm. that they have to type in order to see the thing that is their preference. Right. So I think it's about a reform of who are these people who are making these marketing decisions, and why do they think that these are the choices that they have to make. And it's connected to what you were saying about the advertising imagery on the boxes or in the ads or in the catalogs for sex toys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who says that Pamela Anderson is the platonic ideal of desirability mm-hmm. across the board forever? That's obviously not true. Some people are attracted to Pamela Anderson Lee, whatever her name is now. Like, some women would love to look like her. Plenty of people are attracted to plenty of other people and want to look like plenty of other people, or are happy with the way that they look, even if they look nothing like her.
Right.
So what, I mean, I don't know enough about marketing to know how we're going to change things, but I know that things need to change.
You know, the consumer at the end of the day makes a decision.
Right.
You know,
yeah, it's money in the bottom line.
Yeah, the money is the bottom line, and marketers follow the money. And, you know, if people decide to do, you know, go another way, you know, if you have, you know, companies like, you know, Cindy Gallup's, like, you know, Make Love Not Porn, you know, if they follow her, if she sees how successful, you know, she is, and they say, you know what, all right, well, we'll do, we'll take that on.
You know, there's another company that, called Trenchcoat X,
yes,
that hosts, a lot of commercially produced porn. I believe that Make Love Not Porn is mostly amateur.
Yes.
So, and Trenchcoat X actually has really, I think, been fighting this in a very concrete way, where their search terms, they don't have racially reductive or gender reductive search terms, and they really try also to make it, I believe they also have a function where you can say, you know, this is something that I like and this is something that I don't like. So, and so then when you're searching, you're going to tend to see more of the stuff that you do like and less of what you, and less of what you don't. So that's an example of somebody who's fighting it. I wish more people would do that as well.
No, I've seen their content. Great content.
Totally.
Yeah.
So tell me what else is in the future for House of Plume and also Women of Sex Tech.
That is a great question. it's one that for myself right now, I am in the process of figuring out. Like, you just gave me idea of like, oh, I can do this, and I'm like, oh, okay, because, you know, I didn't come into this to just like just make products, and I think it's great what I've done so far, but there's something else that I want to do with people. You know, it has to be, because I mean, when you're just behind the computer and I'm just like, you know, just looking at data and stuff, I'm like, wait a minute, I didn't do this to do like banking stuff like I used to do before. And I realized that my next step would be something where I am working more closely with people.
Cool.
So I don't know if that looks like, you know, traveling the country and talking to random people about sex or... if that looks like, I don't know, coaching. I don't think so, but yeah, it's a question.
Cool.
It's an open question right now. And as far as Women of Sex Tech, I mean, we're continuing to grow. We have members in the UK and China and Spain. And that has actually gone really well. Respect to how it's grown pretty organically, and it's awesome too that people reach out to us and go, "What do you need? What, you know, we
hell yeah,
you know, we see what you're doing, and you know, what do you need right now?" So yeah, I'm excited to see, you know, how that could grow into more of a delve into more of a national conversation,
cool,
a really international conversation, not just like in sex, because a lot of what we deal with, we deal with sort of on a like a times 10 level with respect to in social in business, you mm-hmm. know, just in having run a business, you just deal with a lot more stuff in this industry. So yeah, I'm excited to see what it looks like. I don't exactly know.
If there's one sex myth or misconception that you could correct, or that you wish that you could, a message that you wish that you could reach out to the most people in the world, what would it be?
Wow, that's a great question. A sex myth. Or
just like what like pisses you off about something that people get wrong about sex?
That, you know, what I would really like to change is the language around sex.
Tell me more.
So for example, a woman will say, "Oh, he made me come." No, he didn't actually. He participated and he happened to be there while you came.
Oh man, that is very powerful.
I started to look at, I don't know what I was doing one day or looking at, where I was like, wow, a lot of language around sex is about men having accomplished something.
Oh my God, I love you.
You know, I said this at an event in Jersey City, actually a women's sex tech event, and boy, and there were a lot of men in the crowd, and boy, did that go down like a lead balloon.
Yeah, I believe you. I believe you. Well, that is let me tell you, I know you know this, but that is a good sign.
It's a good sign. I know. I love actually irritating people because I know that I'm coming up against something.
Yes, you're totally right about that.
And yeah, it's that. It's like, just because, you know, reality, we create our reality, in language. It's like, that's how we first describe what's happening, is language.
Absolutely.
And if you already have it that a man has to do something in order for you to have something, then no wonder you are aggravated or not, or dissatisfied with the way it's going.
And it's true for queer people too, you know, even saying, you know, if I say that a woman made me come, it is interesting to break down the idea that, it makes it seem like I am not participating in it, or I wasn't there, or that, you know.
You're you're some sort of receptacle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as somebody who teaches a lot about dirty talk and how to sort of break down the way that sexuality and language are connected, I really appreciate that. That is actually one that I had not thought about. It kind of reminds me of how I feel like it's important for me not to talk about losing my virginity, right?
Right.
Like I lost something that I, you know, did I leave it in the glove compartment? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I didn't. It's not like I had something and now I don't.
Yeah. You know? So if you could just say, "I came" versus "he made me come," or the inverse of that. And I said this to a guy and he calmed down after I said this, was that the inverse is that you say, "Oh, well, he didn't make me come." You know,
yeah.
It's a way for you not taking responsibility for what's happening with your body and your own pleasure.
Yeah. Or just emphasizing like, "I came," or like, "We came together," or, you know, even if you didn't like come at the same time, like, it's participatory, but it's not, you're right. It's a fallacy to say that, somebody did something to you, unless that's what you're into. You know, I know some people who love the idea of like being forced to come, but that's a different story.
That's a whole different other thing. That's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
That's fine. I mean, it's just I think of it like I can say, "Oh, you made me come," as like a sort of a gift to you, you know. But it's not the reality.
I definitely hear that. My last question for you, is just, will you tell me, what does it mean to you to be an entrepreneur?
What does it mean to me? What it means is living in that I can take an idea from my head and, you know, keep playing with it, sort of like Play-Doh, and it'll become something out in the world. I think that's the basis of like all businesses. It's some sort of idea you came up with, and you get other people to get excited about it, and then it becomes something, and then other people are like, yeah, that's cool, I'll buy that.
Nice. It's as simple as that.
It's as simple as that.
Do you have, I lied, I have one more question. If I have any listeners who are women and or queer people, mm-hmm. Who have an idea like what you just mm-hmm. described, mm-hmm. For something with sexuality, a sex product, a sex media platform like this podcast, a book or a blog or, you know, an Instagram or any number of things, that they want to get started. What's the first step in realizing that idea and making it reality and reaching people with it?
That's a great question. The first step is to talk to people.
Yeah.
Really to talk to people because, you know, sex is, people are, have a duality about sex. They're one way in public, and in private, they're doing something else.
Mm.
And it's important to just get people's, you know, opinion, not their opinion, but really understand, walk in their shoes and understand why is it they do what they do and why is it they, why they don't do what they, you know, it's just like, why?
Empathy.
And empathy, right. Yeah. It is empathy because no matter what, you know, no matter, you know, how old you are, what your background is, or how much or little you experience you have in sex, it's still a very intimate and vulnerable thing.
True.
You know, and you really just want to be kind with people about what they're into.
Abso-fucking-lutely. Well, Lydia, it has been so amazing having you on the show. Is there anything else that you want to make sure that we talk about before we close up?
No, it's it. It's great.
Awesome. Okay, so if people want to get themselves their very own, what the name of the product is?
It's the Moi Box.
What is it?
The Moi Box.
So oh, the Moi. Oh, Moi. Yeah. Yeah,
so for your Moi Box.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah. And so if somebody wants to get a Moi Box, then they should go to houseofplume.com.
Yes.
Fantastic. And if people want to follow you on the internet and hear more about all of your projects, where can they find you?
At House of Plume, wherever, on Facebook, on Instagram, also on Twitter.
Fantastic. And does Women of Sex Tech have a website?
Yes, we are also, we're on Twitter and on Facebook.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming over and being on the show today.
Yes, it was amazing. Thank you so much for the opportunity. My love has some
fun every night. Interrobang is produced and hosted by yours truly, Tina Horn. Our theme music is by my brother from another mother, Moot. Thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.